Hi, I'm the person whose closet is put in color order, but I'll also pick up an earthworm without thinking twice. In fact, I did yesterday. It needed my help. I'm not afraid to be a little messy. Human nature is messy, but nature can help us embrace it. I love the brand Seventh Generation. Their laundry detergent lifts away tough stains with the power of bioenzymes. That's exciting. You wipe your hands on your pants after you pick up an earthworm. Seventh Generation is like, don't worry. Hug a dirty tree. Huff some bark. It's good for you. That is the power of Seventh Generation. Find laundry detergent and other laundry products at seventhgeneration.com. I love worms. So I have four nieces and nephews, and I was talking to my sister about IXL. And IXL Learning is this fun online program for kids, and it covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. My sister and my nephew love it. The way it works is it's powered by AI, so IXL gives the right help to each kid. And IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Maybe you've been looking into private tutoring, but it's out of the budget, or this is a big school year for your kiddo. So make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Ologies listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/ologies. So visit IXL.com/ologies to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hey everyone, this is once again your friendly neighborhood cosmologist, Katie Mack. I am giving a little bit of an update to this episode. So this episode is mostly answering questions about astrophysics and cosmology things. And since it was recorded in 2017, there have been a couple of changes, a couple of updates. One of the things that I answered questions about was asteroid searches, and I mentioned that there is a big part of the sky we're not really looking at. That has gotten better in recent years. There are some new observational projects. We have a much better survey of the sky for finding potentially dangerous space rocks. There are some caveats, though. One of them is that because of things like these new constellations of satellites that are going up, some of that is making those observations a little bit more difficult. I think we're still in a much better place than we were, and we're finding way more potentially hazardous objects. Nothing is a big threat at the moment, don't worry. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that develops in the next few years. The other update is just that my social media stuff is all different now. I'm still on Twitter as @AstroKatie, though I'm using Twitter less these days. I'm on Instagram @AstroKatieMack. So check those out and just check out my webpage, astrokatie.com. That hasn't changed. You can learn about stuff like my book, The End of Everything, Astrophysically Speaking, where I talk about how the universe might end and what that would look like if we could see that. And I have a newsletter now that you can also check out. There's a sign up on my website. It's called Watch This Space Time. So thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Hey, this is Allie Ward here with Ologies. Now, a few things up top. If you like Ologies, I personally, myself, would love it. If you took a second to rate and or review it on iTunes, have you done that yet? It doesn't cost any money, you just do it. And I also totally read all of your reviews. I'm thrilled by them. Today, someone named Smileness, there are six S's in that, said, the actual best. Yep, the actual best. When things get all jargony, Allie fills in the gaps. Great guests, great topics, and a genuinely lovable host. Which, by the way, I read that while walking into the post office, and I almost started crying or skipping. So thank you, everyone, for these. When you leave reviews and you rate it, other people say, hey, what's this thing? Now, cosmology, part two. If you listened to the very, very end of part one last week with the just phenomenal Dr. Katie Mack, a.k.a. Astro Katie, then you learned a lot about particle physics and the Large Hadron Collider, string cheese, black holes, the world's most expensive selfie, and your own aching insignificance. All of ours. If you haven't listened, give it a go. I also tell you a somewhat embarrassing secret at the very end of the podcast. Maybe I'll do that again. So part two with Dr. Mack means getting right into the nitty-gritty, your questions. And trust me, I had a million. But Katie and I were late to meet up with friends to see Murder on the Orient Express, so I could only ask about half an hour's worth of questions. So I may have to nab her in the future to ask the rest, because there's so many good questions.
have so many questions for you. It's like a rapid fire round.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm just going to throw.
I'm here for it.
Okay. I'm going to throw a bunch of questions at you. If you want to skip any of them, you can just pass.
First questions I'm going to ask are from the Patreon page.
Okay.
So people are patrons.
Yeah, we appreciate them very much. They are great people.
They're fantastic.
And we want them to continue and ask lots of questions, which are all very good questions.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
You can be a patron for 25 cents an episode. So,
which is it's an amazing deal.
Isn't that a good deal?
People should totally do that.
I wanted to make it accessible.
Yeah.
If you did feel like tossing a dollar a month, then get yourself over to patreon.com/ologies. I post calls for questions, some behind the scene photos, or some patron only videos. And for $25 a month, I'll be your emergency contact, which I hope you never need. And also, I may not be reliable.
This is a question. I'm just going to say one of the questions, but three different people asked a variation of it.
Aaron Herdman and Alex Intronini. Intronini? Alex? Did I do that right? I'm sorry. Both wanted to know, is there a name for the disorientation and panic one feels when considering the vastness of the universe? Also, do you know of a way to get past it?
There is a name. Well, there are a couple of names. One is cosmic vertigo.
Okay.
And the other is cosmophobia. And I don't know if these are like official names, but these are names that I've heard. Couple of friends and colleagues of mine have a podcast called Cosmic Vertigo, where they talk about cosmology and stuff and space and things. But it's based on that topic. And cosmophobia, I know about because I occasionally get emails from people who say that they have severe cases and want my help. So it is a thing. Sometimes people get really, really upset about like the vastness of space or just like the fact that we have no control over these huge forces. I mean, that is something like I have moments where I'm like, whoa, right? Like, cause there are things like, you know, black holes are colliding with each other and like the universe is expanding and it's accelerating its expansion and like it's getting bigger and bigger and faster and faster. And like sometimes, you know, that stuff is really, you know, I mean, you think about your little life and what's going on in your day to day. And at the same time, like stars are exploding. And, you know, we can look at the Big Bang. Like we can actually see the primordial fireball of the Big Bang. Like we can see that.
How?
Ladies and gentlemen, Allie Ward, zero chill.
The reason is that the whole universe was hot and dense and smaller than it is now. So the Big Bang theory is just the idea that the universe in the past was smaller and denser and hotter than it is now. And so if you kind of dial back the current expansion of the universe, then you get to the universe being very, very small and dense and hot. And so every point in the universe now was at some point much hotter and filled with like radiation, right? So like this part of the universe now in the very distant past was full of radiation and very hot and very dense, right? But so when we look out into other parts of the universe, because light takes time to travel, every time we look farther away, we're looking farther into the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking at that part of the universe as it was maybe a billion years ago or 5 billion years ago or whatever. And there's a part of the universe that's so distant that when we look at it, we're looking at it as it was during the time
what?
When it was still on fire.
What?
Right? So we look, as we look into the distance in any direction, we're seeing that part of the universe as it was when it was still in that primordial fireball kind of state.
Which was how long ago?
So the fireball started to cool around 380,000 years after the Big Bang, after the moment of the beginning, whatever you call that.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's still part of the hot Big Bang, which is like the hot phase. So we can actually see radiation coming from every direction in the sky. That is the radiation of that heat, like that radiation from that early time, just reaching us now from really distant parts of the universe. And so we can look at it and we're looking at like the fireball universe. We're looking at that primordial plasma. And so like we see the Big Bang. Yeah. Yeah. And so like we know that it happened because we can see it. We can watch it. Right. We can actually see parts of the universe that are still there as far as we're concerned.
And that can give you cosmic vertigo.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like thinking about like, you know, that was a big important event. And like So this sort of like nice, gentle, stable universe is not, that's not how it always was. And we don't know, you know, we think that most cosmologists think at the beginning of the universe, before that hot phase, there was a period of very rapid expansion of the universe, called inflation. We don't know why that started. We don't know why that ended. We don't know that that couldn't just start happening again right here, right now. There are theories of the, there are theories where you could have the universe like end right here, right now in this room.
Oh God. Oh God.
So this is an idea called vacuum decay, where you can have like the universe, like have a quantum event happen where one point in the universe like transitions to this other state. It's called another vacuum, a true vacuum state. And that would create this bubble of like death.
Again, bubble of death.
That expands out at the speed of light in every direction. So you would never see it coming.
That sucks.
And it's a probabilistic event. It's a quantum event. So it could happen at any moment. It probably won't.
Oh, God.
You know, it probably we're just wrong about the theory. And even if we weren't wrong about the theory, like the sort of time scale that we calculate for it, it would probably take like, you know, trillions of years or something. But like, it's a probabilistic event. It could happen at any moment, technically. It's just with very low probability. So like, that could freak you out. And I've gotten emails from people, like they read about that and they're like, I can't sleep. And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
Do you have any advice for that?
I mean, you know, I tell them like, So about vacuum decay, I can tell them like a few things. One is that we don't know for sure that this is even possible.
Mm-hmm.
If it were possible, it probably would have happened in the very beginning of the universe, because the conditions for it happening then were much more favorable. So it probably would have already happened if it was going to happen already, or if it was possible at all. And then I say, well, if it's going to like you, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like it's traveling at the speed of light. You won't even see it coming.
That's the best way to die.
Yeah. You won't, I mean, you won't notice. Like basically like, so it is absolutely the best, because you don't see it coming. So you can't be scared of it.
Yeah.
You don't even really notice it, because it's happening at the speed of light. And you're not like around afterward. And
everyone
nothing is
love,
around.
Yeah, everyone you love dies at the same time.
Yeah, everything dies. Everything's gone immediately. Like at the same time, there's no FOMO, right? There's nothing. You're not missing out on anything, because the whole universe is done now, right? Like, and so it's kind of, in some sense, it's like really inconsequential, because there's like no consequences of it. It's
yeah.
So it doesn't matter.
Like, I
you could
go
just
out
blink,
like that.
You know, and then like you know, you blink and like maybe you open your eyes again, maybe you're consumed by a vacuum bubble of death, but like, you know, who cares? Like, who, you don't know.
If I could vote on a way for everything to end, I would be like,
oh, totally.
Yeah.
Vacuum decay. Yeah.
That's going to be my platform. I'm going to run for 2020. Vacuum decay is my platform.
It is the best way to end the universe.
Okay. So that's one way to chill out.
Yeah.
Paula Herrera wants to know, how scared should we be of a giant asteroid destroying Earth? Are any of the sci-fi movie methods to save the planet plausible, or are we basically doomed should an asteroid come our way?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a sadder point, because like, okay, so we're basically not really monitoring about half the sky right now.
What? Okay, no big deal.
Because we used to have some monitoring stations in the southern hemisphere and they lost funding.
So
we don't have as good a handle on like the number of objects out there that could cause really big problems. There's some kind of like goals about how many, like what fraction of objects above a certain size we should be, you know, aware of, right? And it's like, you're supposed to see 90% of objects above some size or whatever. And we're not really there.
Oh no.
So I think there are programs being put together now, and there's efforts to have a better catalog. And it's not like we're due for a giant, you know, impact or anything. Like, it's, you know, these are still things that are probably not going to happen anytime soon, but I can't honestly tell you that like we're on top of it.
Wow.
Like we have, you know, we're monitoring a lot, but we're not monitoring enough to say that like we definitely don't have anything coming. So whether or not we could stop it, like, mm-hmm. Okay, so there are a couple of methods. If we find out about it, early enough, like 5 years ahead, 10 years ahead, then there's a possibility of sending a spacecraft to it and changing the course of it in some way. You don't want to just blow it up, partially because some of these things are like kind of loose rubble piles, and so it wouldn't really work to try to blow it up. But also because, like, if you have a huge asteroid and then you blow it up, then you have like a bunch of smaller asteroids, and that's not always better.
Yeah.
But there are a bunch of really cool ideas for just nudging it a little bit. And if you find out about it long enough in the, you know, before it comes, then you don't have to nudge it very far at all to get it totally off course. It'll miss the Earth. So like one of them is to take a really, really massive spacecraft and just like park it next to the asteroid in the orbit for a while. And so then it gets like pulled a little bit by the gravity of the spacecraft. And that can, if you get it early enough, that's called a gravitational tractor. Yeah. If you get it early enough, that can work. There are other ideas about like creating like a giant sack and like capturing it in a sack, because you can't necessarily, it's not necessarily like a solid thing.
How are you going to make a bag big enough to put around an asteroid?
But, I mean, it depends on the size of the asteroid, right? But I mean, I don't know.
Like, what is that made out of? Like Mylar? Capped on tape?
I don't know.
I'm sorry. I'm a little activated by this. I looked up asteroid bags. I was distracted for a few minutes on some galaxy printed totes and duffels. And I was like, oh, that's nice. And then, okay, I realized that space people call these capture bags. Like, it's just no big deal. Like, just used to collect fallen leaves or a dog doodle. But NASA introduced a plan a few years ago, and I asked the search engine gods what the bag might be made of. And I found out it could be inflatable, could be metal mesh, or could just be high-strength material. Sounds like they're figuring that out, too. My guess is it's just a very large blue IKEA bag. Tow that fucker in. Those things are strong.
There's another idea, which is also really cool, where you like spray paint half of the object so that it changes like the reflectivity, and then that means that like the solar wind will push a little bit more on one half than the other in some way, and that can change the trajectory. So there are a couple of possibilities.
Those are some good options.
Yeah, but you need a lot of lead time and
a lot of paint and a really big bag.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I just can't believe that we're kind of sleeping on the job there.
I mean, it's like, we're not, I mean, there are people, there's a lot of these things are being monitored, and there's nothing that we know about that's anytime soon coming as a threat. But there's also like, we're not fully on top of this in the way that I feel like we should be.
Oh man. Good to know.
Yeah.
Russell Kelly wants to know, will the universe expand forever, or will it eventually collapse in on itself?
That is a great question. Based on our current understanding and the data that we have now, it looks like it will expand forever, which will lead to something called the heat death, which is the most depressing way for the universe to end, which is that, like, that we have dark energy. Dark energy is whatever is making the universe expand faster and faster. If it's a cosmological constant, which is just a kind of dark energy that first invented by Einstein, but it seems to be the case, then what'll happen is that over time, the other galaxies will get farther and farther away. Not Andromeda. The Andromeda galaxy is coming for us now. It's on its way. It's going to collide with the Milky Way in about 4 billion years.
Oy vey.
That'll be fine. Whatever. But then, you know, the more distant galaxies will just get farther and farther away. And eventually we won't be able to see any other galaxies outside of our little local group.
This is like when all your friends grow up and move out to the suburbs, or like get rich and go to Santa Monica.
And then, you know, we won't be able to see like the cosmic microwave background anymore, that afterglow of the Big Bang. So the universe will just get really, really dark and really empty. And then our little group of galaxies will kind of be combined into one big blob. But eventually, like, all the stars will burn out because they'll run out of fuel, and there's no more like gas coming in to make new stars from other galaxies. So the stars will burn out, and then like a bunch of things will collapse into black holes, and the black holes will evaporate, and like the protons will decay, and like everything will just kind of like decay into nothingness. And then, and like, there'll be this like, there'll be this really empty, cold, dark universe with nothing in it, and no like, and just like this tiny amount of radiation and no ability for any new structures to form. Except maybe through some kind of quantum process, which is kind of a cool thing, but that's another topic.
That's so goddamn lonely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called the heat death.
So what happens when the Andromeda galaxy collides with the Milky Way, though? You glazed right over that. What the hell's that about?
That's really cool, actually. So the Andromeda galaxy is a spiral galaxy like our own. It's, it's got about a trillion stars. It's more massive than the Milky Way. And it's got a supermassive black hole. And they're all coming toward us, at 100 kilometers a second. Anyway, they're all coming toward us right now. And,
is it going to smushy smash?
Yeah, it's going to come, and in about 4 billion years, it'll get here and it'll collide with the Milky Way galaxy. And the way that galaxies collide is kind of cool. They like sort of merge and like they make these long trails of stars coming out, and it'll be this sort of like really spectacular light show of like gas will collide and make new stars, and there'll be this burst of star formation, and the black holes might like turn on and start like pulling in matter and really bright, and stars will be flung out into space and on these long tails.
This sounds like a warehouse space rave. I'm not gonna lie, I'd be down for this.
But because there is so much space between stars in galaxies, probably our solar system will not be affected.
Okay.
Like, probably we'll just, like, the sky will get really interesting. But, you know, it'll also be 4 billion years from now, so the sun will be burning out, and, you know, the Earth will already have its oceans boiled away, and life on Earth will be impossible. But if, you know, we left something here to take pictures, they would be really pretty. Yeah.
Mike, Melchior wants to know, are Uranus jokes still funny? It's really Uranus, isn't it?
So actually, I don't know which is a better pronunciation. I usually say Uranus just because I don't want to deal with it. But then it's got the name urine in it too.
I know.
So like it doesn't really help. No, they're not particularly funny.
Okay, good.
No,
just checking.
No.
So I use an AI for transcription for this podcast, and it transcribed to "you're an ass." And I'm sorry, but yes, that is funny. Megan Gerard wants to know, slightly more on a local, practical level. She loves stargazing, but even in a small city, it's hard to do because of light pollution.
Yes.
So can you recommend any tactics, resources, organizations for helping reduce light pollution?
Oh.
Also, she thinks maybe light pollution is bad for us and animals.
It is, yeah.
And so good way to stargaze and good way to reduce light pollution.
So there are national organizations for like dark skies. I don't remember the names, but if you look them up, there are charities that their whole purpose is to try to get better lighting in cities so that more of the light goes down and not up, and changing like what the lamps are made of and stuff like that. So you can get involved in these campaigns, and they're really helpful. I can't remember the name of the organizations right now, but there are a few of them out there.
Darksky.org has a bunch of information on getting involved in dark sky advocacy and membership in this kind of a dark sky club. So hit that up. I will try to do my part and stop falling asleep with the lights on. I fell asleep with them on again last night, but tonight's a night. International Dark Sky Association, I'm going to do my part.
If you want to go stargazing and your city's too bright, you just have to go somewhere else, basically. So when I was living here, when I was growing up in LA, in Long Beach, I was part of the LA Astronomical Society, and they would have dark sky star parties where we would drive like 4 hours into the mountains and it would be really dark there. So you don't have to get that far out of city to do good stargazing.
So getting the fuck out of Dodge.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. There's a really great film called The City Dark, which is about it's about light pollution and what it does to us and what it does to astronomy. And I'd recommend checking that out.
I fell asleep with the lights on last night.
Oh,
it's not good for your brain.
Not good for you.
No. And now this set of questions comes from the Facebook group. There's an Ologies podcast Facebook group. But before we take questions from you, we're going to take a quick break for sponsors of the show. Sponsors? Why sponsors? You know what they do? They help us give money to different charities every week. So if you want to know where Ologies gives our money, you can go to alleyward.com and look for the tab Ologies Gives Back. There's like 150 different charities that we've given to already, with more every single week. So if you need a place to go donate a little bit of money, but you're not sure where to go, those are all picked by ologists who work in those fields. And this ad break allows us to give a ton of money to them. So thanks for listening, and thanks, sponsors.
What do you get for the mom who birthed you into the world? I know, a candle. Are you like, no, that's not quite enough. How about memories that she'll love looking at every day? Aura frames? I love them. So they're a digital photo frame. They were named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and by me. And Aura frames are Wi-Fi connected. You can add unlimited photos and videos, and you can invite as many people as you want to the frame. There are absolutely no hidden fees. There's no subscriptions. You can also react with cute emojis if you'd like, and you can show you love a photo. You can send congratulations or more. It's so wonderful that A, it's not a candle, and also it's not sharing your photos on social media to look at. It's just there. You can share it with the people who you love. I have mentioned this so many times, but my parents have an Aura that I got them. My dad loved that. I have gotten Aura frames for friends, for family members of friends. So I'm a really big fan of them. I love what they do. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off, plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. So that's AuraFrames.com. Use the code Ologies at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. I love these things.
This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. And y'all know I have a little dog named Gremmy, which is short for Gremlin. And y'all helped me name her. And there's nothing that we like more than seeing her happy, which means tasty dog foods. And Merrick has been crafting high-quality dog food for over 30 years. They were founded in Hereford, Texas. But Gremmy doesn't care about that. She cares about smushing her face in it and then licking the bowl. And I don't blame her, because they use real ingredients and home-style recipes like real Texas beef and sweet potato or Grammy's pot pie. Grammy's like, Grammy's pot pie. Get away from it. It's mine. I also like that on the bag, they show what's in it. And they always use deboned meat, fish, or poultry as the number one ingredient. And I think Grammy appreciates that. So check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it. Yum, 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 yum. I know I usually save my secrets for the end of the episode, but I'm going to tell you my secret favorite candy. It's Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. It's really Reese's anything, but Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the thing that I'm like, have I had a bad day? I get these. Have I had a good day? I get these. Chocolate, salty peanut butter, the textures. I love everything about them. Also that there's two. So I'm like, oh, I get this one for later, which is 1 second later. Anyway, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, I love you. That's all. If you're me, you can shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold, and I am. Oh, hi, it's me, the lady that checks a bunch of scholarly articles before she believes anything, Allie Ward. And I feel like we are similar in that we have a fair amount of skepticism and we like to dive deep and find out what the actual facts are. This is why when it comes to any kind of supplements, I enjoy Ritual, which is a female-founded B Corp, meaning that they're holding themselves accountable to not just the company, but also to the health of people in our planet. And they're clinically backed, essential for women 18 plus multivitamin, has these high-quality, traceable key ingredients in bioavailable forms that are clean. Only about 1% of supplement brands are USP verified, and Ritual is one of them. So I like being able to trust what I'm putting in my body. From an aesthetic standpoint, I'll also tell you that Ritual are beautiful little vitamins. They look like lava lamps and they taste like mint. So taking my Ritual is part of my, I guess, morning ritual. That's probably why they named it that, and I didn't even think about it. Anyway, no more shady business. Ritual's essential for women 18 plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. So get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/ologies. You can start Ritual or add essential for women 18 plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/ologies for 25% off. Down the hatch. Okay.
Isabel Lorien wants to know, what do you think the shape of the universe is? Hyperbolic? Toroid? What do you think? Did I say toroid okay?
You said toroid okay.
Okay.
Toroidal is the adjective.
Okay.
But yeah. A torus is a donut shape.
Oh.
That's all she's saying. Yeah.
So a toroid cake would be a donut?
Yes.
Damn. Yes. I went my whole life not knowing this somehow. But also, a torus, apparently, technically would be like an inner tube, hollow. And a solid torus is a donut. But I want to say, I was on a dessert show called Unique Sweets for like a lot of seasons. I have to say, a cake donut seems like a solid torus, but if it's a fluffier yeast donut, there's all kinds of air pockets in there, and the volume and density seems somewhere between a torus and a solid torus, and I need a physicist to get on this for me. Thank you. Okay. Oh, it, yeah. Back to the shape of the universe.
The universe, the way she's asking the question, the answer is the universe is probably flat.
Okay.
Which just means, it just means that there's no large scale curvature to the universe. So I said that matter curves space.
Mm-hmm.
So you get these like dents in space. On the very large scales, the space is flat in the sense that it's not large scale curved. It's still probably three dimensional. I mean, the space part is three dimensional and then there's time. That's a fourth dimension. But, you know, it's flat in the sense that if you had two beams of light that were parallel, they would stay parallel forever.
Okay.
That seems to be the case, at least as far as we can measure. There could be some larger scale curvature that we don't measure because it's just so big. Like if you have a ball that's big enough, it looks flat, like the surface of the Earth looks flat. But the universe on the whole, as far as we know, appears to be flat. There's no evidence for curvature, but it could be curved around on some really large scale.
Okay. We'll find out in before the stars all collapse on themselves, hopefully. Maybe.
Maybe not. I don't know.
TJ King and Laurie March both had kind of the same question. Is there a reason why some stars appear to twinkle more than others?
Oh. Yeah. Well, so stars appear to twinkle when you're looking through the atmosphere because the atmosphere is bending the light a little bit just by being like a little bit hotter, a little bit wetter or something in different parts. And so when you look through that sort of, you know, messy air, it makes the position of the star move around a little bit from your perspective. And that means that sometimes it'll look a little bit brighter and sometimes it'll look a little bit dimmer, and that makes the twinkling. So the brighter a star is, sometimes that makes it look less twinkly or more. Or it depends on kind of what the air is doing. But planets don't twinkle.
Why not?
So the reason planets don't twinkle is because the twinkling of a star comes from the fact that it's just a point of light. From our perspective, it's just a single point of light. And so it can be moved around, and that little point of light can be sort of, magnified a little bit, and that makes it look brighter or less. But a planet is a disk of light from our perspective. It's a really, really small disk, but it's a disk of light that's big enough that the little sort of, turbulence cells or whatever in the atmosphere, only like just move the light around within the disk mostly. And mm-hmm. so it doesn't get significantly brighter or dimmer because the motion of the air is not enough to really change the sort of size and shape of that disk.
So if it twinkles, you got a star. If it doesn't twinkle, you got a planet.
More or less.
Roughly.
Yeah, more or less. So if you see something pretty bright in the sky and it's not twinkling and other things are, then you're probably seeing a planet, and they're probably seeing Jupiter, Saturn, Mars, or Venus.
That's so great.
Yeah.
If that does happen and it's the first time you've heard this, then you should high five Katie on Twitter. Lauren Oakes wants to know, what is the deal with other dimensions? This might not be the right person to ask, but I still want to know.
Okay. So we have three dimensions of space.
Mm-hmm.
So that's forward, backward, left, right, up and down. We also consider time to be a dimension. So when you think about things like relativity, you have to include time as like part of your coordinate grid, basically. And so that coordinate grid has to have four dimensions. So the time is the fourth dimension. And the reason for that is that, space and time can kind of affect each other. Like moving through space at a higher speed changes the way you move through time. And when you're close to a gravitating object, that changes the way you move through time. And so it has to be part of the same sort of malleable fabric in some mathematical sense. There could be other dimensions of space. And that we just can't interact with, we can't see, we can't perceive. And in some cases, those other dimensions of space might be kind of wrapped around themselves.
Okay.
Which is a weird concept, but it's kind of like if you imagine a string, right? Mm-hmm. A string is a three-dimensional object. Two of those dimensions are kind of wrapped around really tight. So it only has a little direction you can go in two of the dimensions. You can go a really long way in the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might be that in space, in our universe. We can go as far as we want in our three dimensions, but the other dimensions are so small that we don't notice them because they're all wrapped up. And one of the reasons that those extra dimensions are hypothesized is that it might be that all of our sort of particle interactions and stuff can only happen in this three-dimensional space, but gravity can leak out into the other ones a little bit.
What?
And so if that were happening, that would explain why gravity is so weak compared to all the other forces.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a hypothesis, you know. So there could be other dimensions that might solve that problem. But
what about multiverses, and is there another me with a better life living in a different dimension?
So when people say dimension in that sense, they just mean another universe. Mm-hmm. The dimensionality, like, the dimension doesn't mean space anymore. It means something else. So there could be other universes, depending on how you define a universe, because you could just define a universe to be everything, and then everything is part of the universe by definition.
There can't be a second everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you can define a universe as just the observable universe, so what's within our sort of the distance out to which we can observe anything, which is a set distance. And then there could be stuff beyond that. We know there's stuff beyond that. So that's kind of outside of our universe. You can think of that as another universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can have other universes that are separated by higher dimensions from us. So you can have you can imagine our universe as a flat sheet and there's another flat sheet. So mm-hmm. we've just taken one dimension down.
Oh, weird.
And they could collide maybe.
Oh, God.
And this is like, there's a theory for the Big Bang that comes from these two sheets collide and that makes a Big Bang and then they come apart and then they collide again later on. It's called the ekpyrotic model.
Whoa.
My thesis advisor was one of the people who came up with that.
Damn.
So there, and then there are other ways to have other, universes, like with the many worlds idea of quantum mechanics, which says that every time a quantum event happens, basically another universe branches out from ours in a way that somehow makes sense mathematically, but sounds ridiculous when you think about it.
Is that kind of like an alternate reality?
Kind of, yeah.
Is there another me in another universe? In another reality who brushes her hair more regularly?
Well, in the many worlds hypothesis, I guess technically that would be the case.
So if that's like a rabbit hole that you want to go into, just like start Googling.
Because in many worlds, like there's another universe where like a photon just went through that window or didn't. And that's the only difference.
Oh my God. Oh my
right?
God.
So like every possible thing.
Raquel Land wants to know, is there actual scientific proof that there might be life beyond our planet? Aliens. Yes, no.
Probably.
Okay. So what does Katie hate about her job? What does she hate?
So one is the uncertainty of the kind of academic career ladder.
Okay.
So I spent the last 8 years as a postdoc, which means I had my PhD and I was doing research, but I didn't have a permanent job and I didn't know where I was going to go next or how long I would be there or whether or not I would be able to continue in science because it was just, you know, applying for jobs. And it's a difficult thing to be doing. And I, you know, all jobs have some uncertainty at some stage, but I feel like in academia, that uncertainty and that sort of tenuousness lasts a really long time.
Yeah.
And if you get to the stage where you're definitely not going to get an academic job and you wanted one, then you have spent many years making not very much money when you could have done something more lucrative and, you would have been better off in like every way. So, you know, I mean, I enjoyed doing the research. And so for me, it was like, well, I'll just keep doing science as long as I can. I enjoy it. I'm willing to make that sacrifice. But for a lot of people, it's just so disruptive and it's so difficult that it's like, it's a really high anxiety time and it's really hard. And a lot of people leave because that is just really hard to deal with. So that's the main thing. And then the other thing is that like, it's really easy to have a lot of like self-doubt and you have to be very kind of self-driven and it's hard to know if you're doing a good job. And like, academia can be very competitive and you don't get a lot of like positive feedback. And so it can be just hard to kind of like keep doing what you're doing and know that you're doing it well or know how to do it well, or, you know, all of that stuff can be difficult.
Which is great that you're a science communicator as well, because you get to get a lot of feedback from the public, I imagine, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, that does help a lot. Like, if I'm, you know, sitting in my office banging my head against something that I feel like I really should know this thing, or I really should understand it, or this should come more easily, and then, you know, I feel like I'm a total failure and I don't know anything, and then I go talk to, you know, a room full of school kids and suddenly, like, I'm an expert. You know? Like, then I feel like I know a lot of things, and then it helps a lot. So, yeah, for me, it's made a big difference in, like, just keeping me from getting too depressed about, you know, not understanding the universe as well as I wanted to.
What about your favorite thing about the job, or cosmology, or physics, or...
My favorite thing is that I get to ponder the deep questions of reality as my job, you know?
Yeah.
like I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and, it was, most of the topics in this conference were not stuff I work on. So it was like really deep questions about the nature of reality and like whether or not space-time is really a thing and how particles really work and all of that. And I was just like, it's not the area I work in, so there was a lot I didn't understand about it, but I could grasp some of it. And I felt like, I just felt so privileged to be able to be in that room and to think about these things and to have some grasp of these huge concepts. And like, I get to, that was part of my work, you know? And that was just an amazing, that's just an, every time that happens, it's an amazing feeling that I get to do these mental exercises and learn about the fundamental properties of the universe. And that's my job.
That's your job.
I mean, and you know, I mean, writing the papers and teaching and all of that stuff is also my job. So there's a lot of other aspects to it, but just learning about the universe is a big part of my job. And I love that.
That's so baller.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for letting me talk to you for so long. I'm so sorry. That's the longest interview I've ever done because there's too many questions. Okay, let's go to a movie.
Okay.
Bye. So we barely managed the movie, which was a very forgettable mystery romp about a train stuck in the snow, but stellar mustaches, and I will remain forever shooketh by this conversation. I'm glad we took as long as we did. Now, to follow Dr. Mac, you can find her on Twitter as AstroKatie or on Instagram
at AstroKatieMac.
And this podcast is at Ologies on Twitter and Instagram, and I'm at Allie Ward on both. And for t-shirts and totes and mugs and to support the podcast while also covering your nude body, go to ologiesmerch.com. And of course, if you like the podcast and want to support, just tell a friend or make a post about it or rate it on iTunes. That's huge. And yeah, I'll give you a secret this week. This week's secret is that I record all this narration in my closet because the sound is pretty good. There's all these clothes to dampen it. But the real nugget here is that I have a real laundry situation, and about half my body currently sitting on a pile of towels, which I will get to this weekend after I obtain some soap. So yeah, I'm podcasting from a laundry nest. I'm like a cozy little woodland rodent talking at you through a machine. Big, huge thanks to Stephen Ray Morris, patron saint of podcasts, for editing this episode, and to Shannon Feltis and Bonnie Dutch for all of their help with merch, and Aaron for running the Ologies podcast Facebook group. And the theme song was composed and performed by Nick Thorburn, aka Nick Diamonds, of the band Islands. He's great. Check out his music. Until then, ask smart people all the dumb questions you want. The universe is big, and regret is maybe the scariest thing there is. Okay, bye-bye.
Pachydermatology, homeology, cryptozoology, lithology, nanotechnology, meteorology,